From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Thursday edition, if you think the Democratic presidential candidates are outliers on where their party stands on abortion, well, think again. Yesterday on Capitol Hill, Speaker Nancy Pelosi's party held a hearing on H.R. 2975, which is being called the Abortion on Demand Act. The measure would do what the Democratic presidential candidates have been calling for, codifying into law the court's decision on Roe v. Wade. Now, how far-reaching would this legislation be? We'll talk about it with Congressman Andy Harris of Maryland, a member of the GOP Physicians Caucus, later here on Washington Watch. And is China trying to hide the origins of the coronavirus? Their secrecy and underreporting of the extent of the virus are fueling concerns that they're is more than meets the eye. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton says the virus could be a bioweapon manufactured by China. He joins us in just a moment. Also, the Trump administration releasing their budget this week that includes millions in spending reductions in areas that would cause conservatives to cheer. But even the suggested cuts, combined with the economic growth of the tax and regulation declines of the eliminations of the Trump administration, which has resulted in historic levels of government revenue, can't keep up with Congress's spending. We'll talk about it with Stephen Moore, a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Then Travis Weber and David Clausen join me to analyze today's headlines and what they mean to you. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. And to our friends out in California, yes, we have listeners in California, I'll be at Calvary Chapel Chino Hills on Sunday morning with our good friend Pastor Jack Hibbs. Multiple services. You can check out the website to find out more about that. All right. In a Thursday press conference, China admitted there are now 15,152 new cases of the coronavirus and that there have been an additional 254 deaths. The admission brings the public number of Chinese infected to nearly 60,000. Now, has the Chinese Communist Party been underreporting the extent of the virus? If so, why? Joining me now to talk about it is Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. He serves on the Intelligence Committee in the Senate. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. It's good to be back on with you, and thanks for discussing the news around this very important and very ominous situation with the coronavirus.
Now, Senator, you've said that there's enough questions surrounding this, the proximity of where the virus began, the underreporting, the secrecy, that there could be more than what we know going on here.
Yeah, Tony, I fear there is. One thing we know is that the Chinese Communist Party has been dishonest and lacked transparency from the very beginning on these matters. The first cases of coronavirus became symptomatic in early December, yet they didn't tell the World Health Organization until the end of December. They continued to hide it from their own people for a long time. In fact, one of the doctors that blew the whistle, Dr. Li Wenliang, was visited in the middle of the night and forced to sign a document that walked back his claims. Tragically, he later contracted the virus itself and has just died in the last few days, leaving behind, sadly, a young child and a pregnant wife. But one thing that China has also not been transparent about, Tony, is the origins of this virus. Many of your listeners may have heard that it originated in an exotic animal market in Wuhan. That is almost certainly false. Respected epidemiologists and other scientists from China published a paper in The Lancet almost 3 weeks ago now that indicated that of the early cases, 14 out of 40 had no contact at all with that market. So that virus went into the food or animal market before it came out of that market. And given the fact that China has been so dishonest and lacked transparency to this day, we at least need to ask the question if there was some kind of breach at their biosafety level 4 super laboratory, which is only a few miles from that market. I don't know if that's the case, Tony, but given the circumstances, it is only reasonable to say that the Chinese Communist Party bears the burden of proof and ought to be forthcoming about exactly what was happening at the laboratory and exactly what they know about the origins of this virus.
Now, this would not be the first time that we've seen something like this happen. In 2004, the SARS leak that was a virus that leaked out in Beijing of a similar institute led to the infections of many people. Two technicians became infected who then spread it to several others. So, I mean, this theory or these questions, I should say, have merit. At least they should be asked.
That's right. There are precedents within China of their laboratories not living up to the standards of Western, especially United States laboratories, even though on paper they are supposed to meet the same standards. We don't even know the full extent of what kind of research was being done in the Wuhan laboratory. We do believe that some research was being done on coronavirus, and it could have been entirely appropriate, Tony. It could have been searching for diagnostic tests or searching for vaccines for the family of coronaviruses. But the burden of proof right now is on the Chinese Communist Party because there are so many unknowns about this coronavirus, and they have been so deceitful and lack so much transparency thus far.
Well, Senator, when you look at what we had Dr. Phil Rowe, Congressman Phil Rowe, on earlier in the week talking about the infection rate of the coronavirus compared to the SARS, almost double, why would they be working with something like this? Is there the possibility that this is a bioweapon, that they have been working to weaponize a virus?
So you might say, Tony, if there is the possibility that it originated in the super lab in Wuhan, the scenario would be good science, bad safety. Perhaps they were researching for a vaccine. But another scenario could, in fact, be bad science, bad safety. They were looking into a biological warfare program. We simply don't know. The Chinese government is not transparent. They're not forthcoming. They have consistently refused our offers of help to send our world-class scientists from the CDC and elsewhere in the United States to help get to the bottom of how this virus originated, which does have implications for how to diagnose it and how to vaccinate against it.
So as I mentioned, they've come out with new numbers acknowledging now that 60,000 people have been infected, 254 new deaths reported. These are additional. So does that give you any confidence that we're now seeing this spike in numbers? Do you think those numbers are accurate, or do you still think they're underreporting?
There's no doubt in my mind, Tony, that those numbers are not accurate. Just last night, 14,000 new cases were reported in a single day. That's in contrast to the Wednesday and Tuesday and Monday of this week when the numbers announced each day were trending downward. So the Chinese have not discovered cases anew. They were well aware of alternative way of testing for the virus using CT scans of lungs. This is not scientific information that's being released. It is political information that the Chinese Communist Party is trying to manage for the purposes of public relations, both domestically and worldwide.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you along with us on this Thursday afternoon. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, my guest, discussing the coronavirus, latest information out of China, over 60,000 people now infected, or they're acknowledging that publicly. Senator, I know you've been in conversations with the president. Yesterday, we actually had Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on, touching on the topic, among other things, that we've reached out to China. As you mentioned a moment ago, we've tried to help. They've rejected a lot of those offers of help. The United States taking the necessary precautions to protect Americans here at home, right?
Yeah, I think the most important precaution we can take, Tony, is what I advised the president to do a couple weeks ago and what he did, which is to shut down travel from mainland China to the United States for foreign nationals. More than 20,000 people every day before this virus hit were landing in the United States from mainland China. It is simply too great a risk. Given all the unknowns about this virus, how rapidly and widespread it spread across China, how long the incubation period is, how contagious it is, what the mortality rate is. So I commend the president for taking that action. Of course, we are doing everything we can to help American citizens who are in China leave China if they want, subject to a quarantine back in the United States or a waiting period in a third country, because we'll always protect Americans who are in danger, and that includes in a outbreak zone. But the most important thing we could have done has been done, which is stopping travel between mainland China and the United States. Now, it's really important that we empower our local and state health officials with as many diagnostic tools they can get, and that all those tools are handed in a quick and competent fashion by our federal authorities so we can identify potential cases of coronavirus and then trace the contacts of all those people who have had it. So far, we only have 15 confirmed in the United States. I hope that it stays order of magnitude, but when there are so many unknowns, it is best, as Ben Franklin said, to err on the side of caution, because a ounce of prevention equals a pound of cure.
Yeah, no question, especially as we see the infection rate on this and how quickly it could spread. One final question for you, Senator. When you look at the World Health Organization, I mean, this could be a global issue. Certainly, the United States taking its effort at making its efforts, it often leads in many of these things. Is the World Health Organization responding appropriately?
They have begun to take it more seriously, Tony. I wish in January they had reacted aggressively and nipped more of this in the bud. Frankly, sometimes they seem more worried about offending Chinese feelings than they are acting aggressively to stop a potential global pandemic. Of course, the United States is the biggest funder of the World Health Organization, and we get it 10 times more money than China does. So you'd like to see them be more responsive to American concerns than Chinese feelings. But in the last week or so, they have begun to realize just how grave the situation is.
Yeah, that's my sense, that they're more concerned about offending the Chinese than actually issuing a very clear, direct warnings. And I see that with other institutions that are global and associated with, like, the World Bank and others. I'm hopeful that the United States leadership on this, again, will influence what other countries will do, and that the Chinese will come forward with the truth and enable the world community to respond to this.
I hope the Chinese are more honest and transparent on this. And in the meantime, in addition to hoping, let's all pray. Let's pray for the scientists and the doctors who are researching this matter around the clock to develop effective diagnostic testing and vaccines to protect all of us here in the United States and around the world.
All right. Senator Tom Cotton, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. He hit the nail on the head. I think first and foremost, prayer. Praying for those affected by this. These are all families. These are all people. Many of them obviously this caught them by surprise. And, you know, they're quarantined in Wuhan where they can't go to work. Everything's shut down. The economy there in China taking a hit on this. So the ramifications are quite significant, especially at the epicenter. So we need to praying for them and pray for God's protection over our country. And thankfully, as you've heard from some of our leaders this week on Washington Watch talking about this, we are taking the appropriate actions. They've put the plans in place. They had them there, and they've activated them. But, you know, we still need the hand of God upon our nation. So continue to pray for our leaders that they would make the right decision, and ultimately that God would protect our country. All right, coming up next, the left is pushing to codify Roe v. Wade into law. Why? How far-reaching would such action be? What would it do to the state laws that protect the sanctity of human life? We'll talk about that next with Congressman Andy Harris of Maryland. Don't go away.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemicalabortion.
China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. The Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, President of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever heard the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Some progressive universities are offering courses to help men unlearn rigid definitions of masculinity, treating it as if it were a mental health condition. Thankfully, the culture doesn't have the last word on manhood. God does. Check out our StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter. It's at T. Perkins. All right. If you think that the current crop of Democratic presidential candidates are outliers and that they don't represent the Democratic Party when it comes to issues like abortion, that might be a nice wish, but it's not based on reality. In the last Democratic debate, presidential debate, now front runner, Democratic Socialist Bernie Sanders said this.
I will never nominate any person to the Supreme Court or the federal courts in general who is not 100% pro Roe v. Wade. Number two, we have got to codify Roe v. Wade into legislation. Number three, we have to significantly expand funding for Planned Parenthood.
And there is no daylight between the presidential candidates on the Democratic side on this issue. This is exactly what Nancy Pelosi's party is attempting to do in Congress. Yesterday, the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on Health held a legislative hearing to consider H.R. 2975, the so-called Women's Health Protection Act of 2019, otherwise known as the Abortion on Demand Act. Now, what would this bill do? Joining me with the answer is Congressman Andy Harris, who represents the 1st Congressional District of Maryland. He also happens to be a medical doctor, and he serves on the Health and Human Services Subcommittee. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right, this is exactly what these presidential candidates are talking about. They're talking about taking, and I find this very interesting, quite frankly, because it's an admission that for 46 years we've been operating under the thumb, the heavy thumb of the court, and now, knowing that the court might shift, they actually want laws to reflect what the court has imposed on the nation for the last 46 years.
That's absolutely right, and you're right. I mean, it seems like every presidential candidate on the Democrat side feels exactly the same way. You know, even the moderates like Mayor Pete can't bring themselves to say that, you know, the partial birth, that a late-term abortion or a, you know, child born alive act should in the case of late-term abortion, be outlawed, or the, you know, Child Born Alive Act should become law. You know, they're as radical as you can be.
Now, people need to know how far-reaching this bill would do. This would reach into the states. In the last 10 years, just for reference for folks, in the last 10 years, since 2010, we have seen a sweep of pro-life legislation across the states. In fact, about 500 pieces of pro-life legislation has been enacted into law. That's almost 40% of all pro-life laws that have gone into effect since 1973 have happened in the last 10 years. If this legislation were to go into effect, and it could, if the Democrats controlled everything, then all of those laws at the state level would be eliminated. This would allow for elective abortions for any reason up to the day of birth. It would reject even small protections like limitations on painful late-term abortions, informed consent laws, and safety standards for abortion clinics. This is radical stuff.
Absolutely, no question about it. You know, personally, I think it would be inventing a new constitutional right. Without the two-thirds majority necessary plus the ratification of the states, I think in the end, you know, the courts probably would turn it down. But that doesn't stop the radicals now. They're passing things. They're going to pass things that just try to promote their tremendously radical agenda on abortion. This is a perfect example. You know, you're absolutely right, Tony. We're seeing now how important the courts actually are, how important it is that President Trump is now appointed and had confirmed over 190 judges, including two Supreme Court judges. You know, the Democrats are very afraid now because they know that the court system is not going to be dependable in terms of upholding their radical abortion agenda going forward.
Now, Dr. Harris, we've talked about this on the program, that what led you into the political arena was the life issue. You were a doctor. You got involved in the pro-life movement. You saw what was happening. This led you into this path of now serving in Congress. We are so close with this last election to appointment of two constitutionalists to the courts. I mean, I think we're like on the three-yard line, if I could use a sports analogy here, of actually seeing America becoming a predominantly pro-life nation again. But it all hinges, in my view, on this next election and what happens. All of this could be erased because we're now seeing, I've never seen, a sharper contrast between the two parties on this issue than what we're seeing today.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, it will all come down to what happens in November, because I think pretty clearly the next president in the next president's term, whether it's President Trump or the next or another president, there are likely to be two appointments at least. And if those two appointments are liberal judges, then we're going to revert to the old days of the courts inventing a right to abortion in the Constitution. If President Trump is reelected, I think we're going to have a 6-3 majority for quite a while of justices who are originalists. They are not going to write new rights into the Constitution. I think there's a good chance that they will turn over abortion law back to the states where it truly belongs.
Dr. Harris, one final question for you. This Abortion on Demand Act, do you think this is going to pass the House of Representatives?
Oh, I think if it gets to the floor, I think it will have the votes to pass. Thank goodness that, you know, Mitch McConnell in the Senate will never consider it. And, of course, the president would never sign the bill. But this is a radical House. This is driven by the extreme left wing of the Democrat Party. And on this case, with abortion, it will be abortion on demand up until birth. And some would suggest even perhaps after birth.
Wow. Wow. Congressman Andy Harris, thanks so much for taking time out to join us this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right. Congressman Dr. Andy Harris, pro-life doc out of Maryland. You need to pay attention to what's happening. If Nancy Pelosi and her friends were successful and not only passing this out of the House, but influencing the elections to have a Senate that would work with them and a president that would sign it, it's over. All right, coming up next, the president, his administration releasing their budget. Great budget. The problem is Congress continues to spend. That's dangerous. Stephen Moore, the Heritage Foundation, joins us next. Don't go away. Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council and host of Washington Watch. I invite you to join our family and thousands of others across the country in standing on the Word of God as we go into 2020, the global year of the Bible, by joining in a two-year family chronological Bible reading plan. I can assure you that your family will be powerfully impacted by reading God's Word and growing in the understanding of His truth together. The readings take only 15 to 20 minutes a day, with Sundays set aside for a family or small group discussion. To join us, simply go to TonyPerkins.com and click on Stand on the Word with FRC. That's TonyPerkins.com or call 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Let's stand together on the Word of God and change the world, beginning in our own home.
Last year, my brother Josh, a 37-year-old married father with five kids under the age of nine, announced he was becoming a woman. Josh changed his name to Melissa and now requires everyone to use she, her pronouns when referring to him. If the grandparents refuse to do this, they've been threatened with limited access to their grandchildren. My tall, handsome, muscular brother began taking strong female hormones that transformed him into a different person. He began wearing dresses, wigs, heels, and makeup in public. He will have to stay on female hormones until the day he dies. He refuses to answer to the name Josh now. He says Josh is dead. There was even some type of symbolic burial ceremony to say goodbye to Josh, once and for all. You've been listening to an excerpt from a six-part series telling the true account of a family impacted by the transgender movement. To read this important blog series, visit frc.org/cult.
Welcome back. I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch. Through tax cuts and a rollback of various federal regulations, the economy is humming. And as a result, tax revenue to the federal government is at an all-time high, literally a record. But despite the booming economy and the uptick in government revenue, we continue to see deficits and a growing debt. Why? Joining me now with the answer is Stephen Moore, senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation and author of a USA Today opinion piece on this topic. Stephen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. Good to be with you.
Yeah, I haven't seen you in a while. Good to talk with you. Let's talk about this. I mean, tax revenue is up. These are recommendations you made as an advisor to the Trump campaign. I mean, they cut taxes, rolling back regulations, doing all the right things when it comes to the economy, and it's working. I mean, this stuff works. But we still have a huge problem when it comes to deficit and debt. Why?
So I think you've described the situation very well, Tony. And you're right. When Larry Kudlow and I were working with Donald Trump, it was just about 4 years ago when we first sat down with him and kind of mapped out a strategy for dealing with this, you know, enormous debt problem. And by the way, this was something that landed on Donald Trump's, you know, desk when he walked into the Oval Office. These really dismal numbers were baked in the cake for years and years in advance. And so there were as a two-part strategy. First part of the strategy was, as you just described, grow the economy, get people back into jobs, get people off of welfare into work, get companies more profitable so that they hire more workers, but also when companies make more money, they pay more taxes. And that part of the strategy worked very well, Tony. I mean, as you just said, the economy is flying high right now, maybe the best economy we've had in 30 years, record number of people working. And so you are right, sir, that tax revenues to the government are bursting every record. So then why do we have these trillion-dollar deficits? And the problem is that there's been almost no spending control. Trump just released his budget this week, which was very solid budget that would put us on a glide path to a with some modest cuts and some caps on spending. But the frustration, Tony, is that it goes over to Congress and they just declare it dead on arrival.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that he's actually put forward some really good budgets that make conservatives cheer because it gets rid of some of these institutions that are within the federal government that shouldn't be funded to begin with. And so, I mean, it does, for a multitude of reasons, I like his budgets. But this is a problem when you look at a Congress, especially in the House. And every time you look at cutting, you end up with this stalemate between the president and Congress threatening a shutdown of the government. I mean, look at what's happened over Planned Parenthood and abortion funding, the president drawing a line and Congress threatening to shut down the government in the past. I mean, so the president really needs to have some allies he can work with if this plan is actually going to work.
Yeah, and I think you and I go back to the Reagan years, so, you know, when the same strategy was used. You know, this was not a new technique where, you know, the Congress basically says, you know, if you don't give us our way, you're going to have a shutdown of the government. We're going to blame it on you. The media always, isn't it interesting, you know, whether it's a Democrat in the White House and a Republican Congress or, Republican president and a Democratic Congress, it's always the Republicans' fault, right, when we have a shutdown of the government. But I have to say this, that, you know, I'm frustrated because, frankly, neither party in Congress wants to cut the spending. I mean, I remember, and you do, that when we had the Tea Party movement and a real rebellion against the out-of-control spending. But I have to say, neither party has much interest in – they like to play Santa Claus. That's what Congress does.
But that's what's so refreshing about this president. If Congress could just take his budget and say, it's not us, it's the president, and take his budget, and he would sign it.
Oh, no question. And, you know, let me give you one example of something you were talking about, you know, with his so-called cuts. By the way, the Sunday before the budget came out, the New York Times and the Washington Post both ran front page stories saying Trump slashes the safety net, What? There were things like saying, look, if you're going to get food stamps, we've got 6.5 million surplus jobs in this country. Maybe, you know, you should be required to get a job. Nobody wants anyone to go hungry in this country. But, you know, if the government's going to help you, you have to help yourself. And we're going to put you into a job. Oh, my God, that's a slash of a social program. Another example being, you know, foreign aid. I got a call this weekend from this reporter from a major newspaper saying Trump wants to cut foreign aid by 22%. He said, do you support that? I said, no, I don't support that. I think we should cut those programs 100%. Why do we have any foreign aid programs? I mean, we've known from 50 years of experience these foreign aid programs have zero impact. And when we've got problems in Detroit and Chicago and Newark and Cleveland, why are we sending money to these foreign countries to corrupt governments? But it's just every program has this constituency in Washington and the lobbyists who fight for them.
Yes. Even it's amazing to me the foreign governments that have lobbyists that are here lobbying for their money.
And you're 100% right. And so, you know, I think that we have to grow the economy to get the revenues because I don't think anybody's going to cut the spending.
Well, I hope that while the sun is shining, we can make hay and hopefully get a Congress that would work with this president. Maybe next time around that would cut some of the spending because this, quite frankly, Stephen, I see this as a moral obligation to the next generation.
Yeah,
Stephen Moore.
A great country cannot borrow $1 trillion a year.
You're right. Absolutely. That's what we're talking about, $1 trillion a year. We're up against a break. I want to thank you for joining us, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, Stephen Moore, Heritage Foundation. You can read this piece. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Short, insightful. We do have a problem. When we come back, Travis Weber, David Clawson joins me. We talk more about this. Is it a moral issue, this debt spending?
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemical-abortion.
China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. the Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, President of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever heard the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Some progressive universities are offering courses to help men unlearn rigid definitions of masculinity, treating it as if it were a mental health condition. Thankfully, the culture doesn't have the last word on manhood. God does. Check out our StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com. I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. And let me remind you, if you have never been to the Holy Land and you'd like to take the trip of a lifetime, joining General Jerry Boykin, former Congressman Michelle Bachmann, myself, and lots of other folks on a trip to Israel, unlike any other, not only do we see the biblical, historical sites, but we also meet with current political, military, and religious leaders, and see how all of this intersects, looking at the geopolitical landscape of the Middle East, which is quite fascinating right now. It always is, but even more so now with the discussion of the peace plan and all these other things. If you'd like to join us, we're going June the 2nd through the 12th. To find out how you can be a part of that, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, I want to continue the conversation here briefly on the Trump budget, a good budget proposing some eliminations of things government shouldn't be doing, an increase, an appropriate increase, I should say, in areas like the military, homeland security, protecting that. I mean, that's the primary purpose of government, to protect the citizens. Zeroing out to Planned Parenthood, you know, PBS and all that liberal stuff, cutting that. Lots of good positive life things. We're going to talk about that. Also, speaking of life, on the Hill today, we were mentioned earlier about the Abortion on Demand Act. Well, there's some other good news on the life front, announcement by the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, some upcoming votes in the Senate on life. And then also today, efforts to resurrect the ERA took place in the House of Representatives. Joining me now to talk about this, Travis Weber, President, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs, and David Clausett with our Christian Worldview and Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview. Guys, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony.
And congratulations on the promotion there.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right, let's continue our discussion on the budget. A good budget, another good budget, I should say. Of course, it's dead on arrival with Congress, and that was the point that Stephen Moore made, because Congress loves to spend money. We're going to continue the trillion-dollar deficits plus, trillion-plus deficits. We're now over $22 trillion in debt. This is a problem.
Tony, despite the administration's effort to put forth a good budget, you know, I mean, it's, or maybe and perhaps and because of it, they're getting grilled on this. And OMB Director Russ Vogt was over there yesterday, just getting grilled right left by Democrats in the House
for being responsible,
for being responsible with this budget. We're celebrating the great pro-life provisions in this budget. You mentioned zeroing out Planned Parenthood. We have deletion of the earmarks for UNFPA, family planning, reproductive health in the state and foreign ops bill, which we had fought a lot for this fall. Other good provisions protecting conscience rights and the good work HHS is doing over there. So the budget kind of outlines, and you know, I can go into it more, but outlines a lot of good pro-life work that we're happy to see in there.
You know, David, some would say, well, this isn't a family issue. Why is FRC focused on budget and financial issues? It is a family issue. It is a moral issue. When a government, when a people are spending money that they do not have, it's wrong on so many fronts. I mean, this is a moral issue.
It absolutely is a moral issue, Tony, and Scripture is clear that the borrower is servant to the lender. And actually, Scripture, you know, we talk about a biblical worldview, and Scripture talks about money more than almost any issue in the Bible. And so absolutely, it's important for Christians to look at this budget, like Travis just said. You know, it's also important for Christians to understand that policies and budgets flow from a worldview. And I think that's, in the brief time I've had to look at the proposed budget, is seeing that this president has consistently demonstrated a commitment to a worldview that values the personhood of the unborn, and that's clear in this budget.
Well, and on another front, with the government now having over $22 trillion in debt, I was also reading just recently how the American citizens, now hold a record amount of debt, and a lot of it is on credit cards. So really the government sets the tone and the tenor. They set an example for what Americans will do. So if the government doesn't see a big deal, just spends money they don't have, the American citizens follow suit. And I mean, that's so problematic on so many fronts.
Well, and Tony, this is why we are pleased to see the administration's policies on the issues that we talk about almost every day, life, family, religious liberty, because it sends a signal when the administration is clearly prioritizing them. I don't think it's lost on anyone that President Trump has been very strong in the life issue, speaking at the March for Life, pledging to sign good pro-life legislation. I think that's giving encouragement to the states. It's giving encouragement to the Senate as we move good pro-life legislation there, or attempt to move it. And so I really do think this signal that the administration's setting on these issues is very important.
And I would just add, Travis, I would add to that, you know, we think about the biblical worldview and what is the role of government. Romans 13 is really crystal clear that the role of the government is to wield the sword of justice. It's to protect its people. And so even that aspect of the government, making sure that our military is funded, making sure law enforcement has resources, that's another good thing to see from a biblical worldview.
Yeah, and I would throw into that funding Big Bird with a drag queen is not something that the federal government should be funding. And that's the type of stuff that the president is reducing in his budget proposal. If people want to watch that, let them raise their money on their own to do that, not taking out of the pocket of taxpayers. Speaking of life issues, we were talking earlier with Dr. Harris, Andy Harris, congressman for the 1st District of Maryland, about the Abortion on Demand Act that was in a hearing in the House yesterday. That's an attempt to codify into law Roe v. Wade. And again, I mentioned earlier, I find it very interesting that the Democrats, now fearful they're going to lose control of the courts, are all of a sudden now acknowledging that we've been operating under the thumb of the courts and not the law. And so they want to codify the court opinion into law so that it can't be changed with a new court decision.
Tony, I think I am as excited as ever on the life issue when we look at the lay of the land, look at all the positive developments that we're seeing. And I think Christians who care about protecting all human life, as the Bible commands us to do, should be also excited about the positive developments we're seeing. And along with that, the desperation by the pro-abortion crowd as they try to throw everything at the wall. I think this is a really failing attempt we're seeing today to respond to the truth that was illuminated at the Born Alive hearing at Senate Judiciary the other day. And we have so many other positive aspects to highlight. I have looking at just a list of quotes from key House members today talking about human life. We shouldn't let the Democrats' failing attempt to throw this at the wall, throw everything at the wall here and see what sticks, distract us from the positive. We have so much positive momentum on life right now.
No question, but I think it should be a reminder that what is happening in terms of the positive developments, how close we are to seeing America becoming a pro-life nation, a predominantly pro-life nation again, is not a done deal. I mean, we can't sit back and rest thinking, oh, the momentum is carrying us the direction it's going to happen. There are those now that are more energized than ever to advance this radical anti-life agenda. And we're seeing it unfold not only on the presidential candidate stage of the Democratic Party, but we're seeing really members of Congress taking their cues from those candidates.
Fully agree. And we have so much opportunity now. We're going to get Senator McConnell, Leader McConnell in the Senate just announced today that we are going to be getting a vote on the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act and the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, both at the end of February in the Senate. This is an opportunity for everyone to weigh in with their senators and let them know they need to support both common sense bills to protect the unborn in the Senate later this month.
Okay, describe both those bills just to refresh our listeners' memory as to what those two bills do.
So the Pain Capable bill, Tony, would prohibit abortion after 20 weeks, basically, based on the research, which is showing us that these babies in the womb, the unborn, are feeling pain at that point. And there's new science that's continuing to develop on this issue. But that bill really gets at the protection of the unborn once it is obvious they're feeling pain. The Born Alive bill, which I mentioned, all that mandates is that babies who survive botched abortions should receive the same level of medical care that anyone else at that point is receiving in our yeah. medical systems. It's common sense.
Yeah, and that's the bill we were just actually discussing just earlier this week, where Petrina testified in the Senate Judiciary Committee on that bill. That was Ben Sasse. That's Senate Bill 311. That now, according to the leader, and he's the one that schedules it, says that there'll be a vote on that and the pain-capable bill. Now, having spoken to the leader and many in the Senate, they had actually hoped to move these bills earlier, but because of the impeachment hearing, which has taken up all the legislative time, they are now getting to those. So that's encouraging, and it's going to again show a contrast, I think, between the two chambers.
It will. And the Pain Capable bill in the Senate, Senator Lindsey Graham's bill. In the House, as you know, the Born Alive bill we've been focusing on, we continue to try to have a hearing in the House, but the House Democrats are blocking that. If we can get enough signatures on what was known as a discharge petition, we can force that to come to a vote in the floor. We have 204 now. We need 218. And so Whip Scalise over in the House has been instrumental in that effort. So we're moving on all fronts. We have movement in the state level. The West Virginia Senate just passed one of these today. President Trump has pledged support for it. So really, we're at a good spot, but we need folks to weigh in with their elected officials to let them know they support these pro-life measures.
Absolutely. And folks, you can find out how to do that. You can call the switchboard at the Capitol, which is 202-225-3121, 202-225-3121. Ask to speak with your senators, and they will connect you, or you can go to tonyperkins.com, follow links over. All right, a busy week on Capitol Hill. In fact, earlier today, there was a vote on the what most people thought was dead and gone, the Equal Rights Amendment. But Virginia, resurrecting that, and some in Congress trying to now move this thing forward. What happened today?
So, Tony, we did see the House pass the resolution advancing the Equal Rights Amendment. Despite widespread opinion among the legal and academic community that this thing is constitutionally dead on arrival, even Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg weighing into that effect, the good news here, I think, is I think people are seeing the message that this the ERA is really pro-abortion. It's anti-family. We only had five Republicans vote for it. You know, I think everyone should be voting against this, given the constitutional ineptitude of the measure and this effort. But it's important to monitor this. You know, I don't expect it to really move anywhere beyond this. But it's important that people understand the threat to life and family that's embedded in this provision.
Well, it has a whole new element to it. Now that we're in an age where sex, male or female, no longer exist, and this whole era of gender confusion, that's now wrapped into the ERA movement.
It is wrapped into it, because if sex, by interpretation through the courts, includes gender identity protections, well, then that allows all of a sudden biological men to gain access to women's private areas, locker rooms, bathrooms, et cetera. And it also creates inequality as protections and legal provisions designed to help and aid women specifically are nullified through the inclusion of biological males in those programs. So these are all dangerous with the ERA. Thankfully, we had those willing to speak out against the dangers, like Representative Debbie Lesko, noting that Ruth Bader Ginsburg has even called this dead on arrival. Kay Granger, Vicky Hartzler also spoke out against this. So it's good to see that we have those on the Hill who understand the threat to this, folks that we work with, despite those who are pushing the narrative that this is somehow good.
You know, I want to go back to something you said here as we get ready to wrap up. You're talking about this is a great time on pro-life issues. It's an exciting time. And David Clawson, this is a time in which there's a lot of darkness morally, spiritually, culturally in our country. But if we're willing, we can let our light shine in such a way that it can have a profound impact on the world today.
We absolutely can, Tony. And I think a fantastic example of that is South Carolina Representative Jeff Duncan. And I think all of our listeners, if they haven't seen it, yesterday, the House held a hearing on that bill that you referenced earlier that would basically allow a totally unregulated abortion industry. And he was waved onto the committee and actually quoted scripture in that committee room, saying that as a Christian, this is why people need to get involved and stand for life. And it was a profound moment that I hope all of our listeners have time to look at.
All right. Travis Weber, David Clawson, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right, folks, and thank you for joining us as well. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Lots of resources there for you under the tab, Episode Resources. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, "When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing."
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.